I got the red-eyed unemployed workers' desperation blues.
Why does a wealthy country like Australia allow its unemployed workers to struggle in poverty without trying to create jobs? You may well ask. Unemployed Workers Fight Back is the Australian Unemployed Workers Union program, part of the SUWA program, on every second Friday of the month, 5:30 p.m. on 3CR Community Radio. Our social security system is being defunded, privatised and dismantled, and the poor and vulnerable are being criminalised and trampled upon. The Australian Unemployed Workers Union is focused on helping unemployed and underemployed workers deal effectively with the job agencies, empowering them to fight back for their rights. Remember, Unemployed Workers Fight Back every second Friday of the month at 5:30 p.m. on 3CR Community Radio. Good afternoon, you're with Valerie Farfalla on Unemployed Workers Fight Back, a SUWA program on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 a.m. digital, podcast and streaming live from 3cr.org.au and available later today, which you can hear on 3CR every second Friday of the month at 5:30 p.m. on behalf of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. And today my guests are AUWU President Owen Bennett, who will update us on the latest issues facing unemployed workers and welfare recipients and comment on the federal budget and its implications for disadvantaged people. He'll also update listeners on recent conferences, campaigns and those planned for the near future. My second guest will be John Falzon, Chief Executive of the St Vincent de Paul Society National Council, who argues for the need for a social infrastructure budget. It's time for an alternative to the dying neoliberal framework, he says. We cannot risk any further erosion of our social protection program. We'll also talk to others from the AUWU Melbourne branch meeting and including Duncan Storer. Hi, Duncan.
Hi, how's it going?
And you're from so many organisations. Which one are you from today?
Freedom from Poverty. We lobby the government and we campaign to make trying to get a plan put into place to fight poverty.
Well, look, that's great. And just while we're waiting to talk to Owen Bennett, we'll just go to a song from the band who knew too much, Laundry Bag Blues.
My place, I've been living right out of my suitcase, and I don't care much for hotels. They never offer to wash your dirty clothes, and they never seem to know about no laundry. Well, I've been trucking it around the world, New York, Paris, London. I've even been to laundries in Brazil. It's glamorous, I know. Why doesn't someone write a show about my pillowcase and dirty socks on Broadway? Round, round, my clothes go round, round, my clothes go. Sometimes hard to find, they've moved or they're shut down. Oftentimes I've dragged my bag of clothes all over town. We wind up in a coffee shop, my laundry bag and I. Tea for two old pals, all sad and lonely. It's like a lottery, you know, another form of gambling, to take your precious wardrobe somewhere new. You won't hear a sound as your coloured clothes go round, and the bleach from the last load works quietly. Round, round, my clothes go 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 round, round. round. concrete floors, fluorescent lights and plastic chairs to wait on. It's here that we present our worldly wares. We dress the best that we've got left, tracky dacks for sure. Just don't expect us to have any socks on. Automated laundry light.
Good afternoon, Owen. How are you?
Oh, I'm good, thank you, Barry.
I've got Duncan Storer in with me today, which is great. So Duncan's here today, and Owen Bennett is the president of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, and he's going to be updating us on the latest issues facing unemployed workers and welfare recipients, and hopefully comment on the federal budget and its implication for disadvantaged people. So, Owen, what's been happening? You're reporting back on some of the recent activities with the union and what's coming up. So you mentioned earlier today the Josh Park Fing commemoration. Could you just summarise what happened there, please?
Sure, Valerie. Well, so as some of your listeners might be aware, on the 19th of April last month, it was the two-year anniversary of Josh Park Fing's death, the tragic death of Josh. He was only 18, and he was at his work for the Dolph site, and he was essentially bullied into riding on the back of a tractor, and he fell off that tractor and hit his head and died. And that's something that we've been fighting for a lot. We've been working with the family to try to get justice for Josh, and at the moment there's been the government have not released a report into the death. Michaela Cash apparently has her department has written a report about what happened to Josh but hasn't released it publicly, and been sitting on that report almost for 2 years, which is just disgraceful.
Oh, yes.
And I know that Ian Park, Josh's dad, has said multiple times that he wants that the program shut down. And I think that that's exactly what needs to happen, because there is no actual evidence that the government has done anything to prevent this from happening again. So not only is this a very punitive activity, it essentially forced labour program where people don't get any payment for doing busy work, but it's also dangerous. And that has been proven through the increased injuries. We know that injuries went from about 100 to 500 in the space of a year. And now we've got a death on our hands, and it's not going to be a matter of time, basically, before we see another death happen at work for the Dole. And what we're asking the government to do is shut down that program. And what has the government done in response? Well, it actually increased the amount of hours people are going to be forced to attend this forced labour, dangerous program. So it's a really, really big issue for unemployed people and for the entire society, because is this the kind of country that we want to live in, where we force unemployed people who are unemployed through no fault of their own, simply because the government hasn't created enough work for them, they're being forced to attend a labour program where they don't get any money, a free labour program? That's dangerous. Is this the sort of society we want to live in? And if you ask most people that question, I'm sure that you tell them the facts, that the reality of unemployment, the reality of work for the Dole site, they will be disgusted that this is happening in our country. This is the message we need to get across to people, and we need to make it very clear to the government that we're not going to accept work for the Dole any longer. And this is part of our Work for the Dole campaign. We're talking to people on the ground who are unemployed workers who are being forced to do work for the Dole sites. We're telling them that actually you can boycott work for the Dole. There's ways that you can boycott the program and basically get your own activity that suits your needs and is safe. So that's a really big program we're doing, and we're encouraging people all across Melbourne and across the nation to come in on our Boycott Work for the Dole program. So if people are interested in that program, I strongly encourage them to visit our website, get in touch, have a look at the contact form, get in touch with us, and we'd happily get you involved in that Work for the Dole action group.
That's good. Now, just on that topic, on Tuesday, the federal government revealed a $1.1 billion redirection of funding to reform the three-year CDP in remote Indigenous communities. And it's very interesting because participants there earn, on average, about $11 an hour for up to 25 hours of work or work-like activity for 46 weeks a year and face strict penalties for non-compliance. The changes, which begin in February, will cut the required work hours to 20. But it doesn't change anything else. So it's still blatantly discriminatory towards Indigenous people as well. So they actually have to work more than double hours of non-remote job seekers for the same income. So that's an important point as well, isn't it, Owen?
Yeah, that's right. And we're working as much as we can with people in the CDP to try to incorporate them into this campaign because, as I said, Work for the Dole is a national disgrace, and it's shameful that we've allowed things to get to this point. And I think that there's a lot of groups in society, such as the trade union movement, the welfare sector, all these groups need to get together and they need to say, enough is enough. We can't accept Work for the Dole any longer. It's as I said, a forced labour, dangerous program where we're essentially just punishing unemployed people because they're unemployed. Punishing people because they're unable to find jobs that don't exist. That's basically what's happening in our unemployment policy at the moment, and trade union movement and everybody that's related to the rights of workers need to get in and fight for the rights and dignity of unemployed workers, and that's across CDP, it's across all these areas. And the first step there is to shut down Work for the Dole.
Because we haven't had a firm commitment from Labor on that, as we haven't had one from Labor on Newstart. Is that right? Has there been a firm commitment yet?
No, exactly. And that's basically what one of the main targets is going to be is the ALP. Their national conference is coming up in June in Adelaide, and we want a motion put to that conference that they will commit to commit to scrapping Work for the Dole when they get into power. Yeah. At the moment, all we're hearing from them is that they're unhappy that that the activity isn't being regulated, and that there are instances like Josh Park Singh happening. But basically, they support the idea of the program, but they don't support how it's being executed, which is a real shame, really, that this is what the ALP has come to, that they're actually, in essence, supporting the idea of forcing unemployed workers to attend the pre-labour programs. And that's a disgrace in and of itself. So the trade union movement has a lot of power within the ALP. They support motions on the floor at the National Conference, so we're encouraging all our members to lobby with their unions to try to get them to put forward a motion at that national conference to get the ALP to come in strongly against Work for the Dole.
All right, there's another issue that was raised that we were talking about earlier today as well. This week, Leanne Ho from the National Social Security Rights Network she contributed to an article by Christopher Nouse from The Guardian Australia, which said community groups have warned that the coalition's plan to dock the welfare of those who are repeatedly unable to pay fines will compound the plight of Australia's most disadvantaged. And if they repeatedly fail to pay fines, it's been announced as a brutal measure that will drive those on the lowest incomes into homelessness, especially given that there was no increase to the poverty level Newstart payment. Now, you mentioned that today as well. Apparently, the Commonwealth would be able to make compulsory deductions from the welfare of serial fine defaulters who've outstanding state and territory court-imposed fines, and the government would also be able to suspend or cancel welfare for anyone with an outstanding arrest warrant for a serious criminal offence. And the National Social Security Rights Network has warned the measure will compound the plight of Australia's most disadvantaged. I wanted you to comment on that as well, because you mentioned today that the demerit point system strips away the rights of the appeal and government oversight in the first 3 points. Can you explain that to our listeners, Owen?
Sure. Well, just on your first point there about the deductions of people's social security benefits, I mean, it's plain as the nose on your face that it's going to compound poverty. But what's really, really concerning about that is just essentially the government are taking another step towards denying people's right to social security. Because if they can say that the government can come in and deduct your payment because you haven't paid a fine, there might be all kinds of reasons why you haven't paid that fine. But to empower the government to come in and take away your social security payment, something that you're entitled to by law, sets a very, very dangerous precedent. And this is how the government is approaching people on Social Security. They're approaching them as guilty until they prove themselves to be innocent. And we've seen that again and again. We've seen it with the robo-debt, same thing. They basically send you a letter saying that you owe us money. It's up to you to prove us. It's up to you to prove to us that you don't. And then if you don't prove it to them on the right time, then they take that. They'll take money from you. And this is happening with once more, as you said, in the Guardian article about money being deducted if you don't pay fines. And now once more, it's happening again, being expanded massively under the demerit point system. And the demerit point system is probably the most dangerous development that's happened in Social Security system since the welfare state was introduced in 1945. What this demerit point system does, for the very first time, it privatizes compliance. So ever since Social Security has been around, basically job agencies have had the power to cut your payment if you essentially don't accept work that they believe is suitable for whatever reason. But the decision about whether your payment should be cut or not, in every case, always is the decision made by the Department of Human Services, by the government, by Centrelink. They're the ones who are empowered to make that decision, and it's always been that way. When they privatized the job agency system in the late 90s under Howard, that remained. So every time someone got cut off, that decision was made by the government, by Centrelink. It wasn't made by private companies because the government, I think rightly so, they saw, well, there's a perverse incentive here. If we give job agencies the power to cut people's money off, then they're going to be cutting people's money off for whatever reason they want in order to make more money for themselves. But that whole idea has been dropped now because the demerit point system, for the first time ever, gives the power to private companies to cut people's payment without any government oversight and without any appeals. So the privatisation of a compliance system.
Do you think that's a legal issue that we can raise? Is there something illegal about that, do you think?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, so I couldn't comment, but, I mean, with legislation, the government, I think, is empowered in all sorts of ways to make laws that, you know, might breach the human rights of people, but it's a political struggle that we have to fight. And unfortunately, there hasn't been enough fighting going on around the demerit points issue. It slid in and no one really, I guess, noticed how dangerous this policy is of giving job agencies, private companies, many of whom are billion-dollar organizations, the power of life and death over unemployed people. And they can cut you off and you don't have the right to appeal and the government can't regulate that system.
Mm.
And just for those people at home, the unemployed workers who might be getting a little bit worried about this system, which comes in July, so very soon it's going to be, and it was legislated, and as I said, it was voted in with the support of the crossbench recently. But how it works is that you have 7 points, and each point is for a breach. So the first 3 points, those decisions can be made by the job agency, and there's no oversight in those first 3 points. And every time you get one of those points, you get a suspension. And then points 4, 5, 6, and 7, those decisions are made by Centrelink. So what they've tried to do, they've tried to combine the two systems. They're combining government oversight with the privatisation of the compliance system. But what the Unemployed Workers Union is saying is that this sets a very, very dangerous precedent, that they're allowing job agencies to come in, make those compliance decisions, and we're going to see a huge increase of penalties because job agencies, what we've found on the ground, have worked out that the best way to make money is basically to bully people into doing things that make them money. It's not rocket science. Anyone could have predicted this happening, and this is what's happening en masse. So if you give job agencies more power to penalise people, then they're going to use those penalties to bully people into outcomes. The outcome payments was what they're called, so they can make money. So, for example, work for the dole is an outcome that makes job agencies money. So let's say I rock up to an appointment with my job agency and they say, you have to do work for the dole, And I say, actually, I'd prefer not to do work for the Dole. I'd prefer to do a voluntary activity that I've sourced for myself. The job agency knows that they don't get any money for a voluntary activity that I've sourced myself.
Yeah, that's right.
They'll say, if you don't do work for the Dole, yeah, I'm going to penalise you, or something to that effect. And that means I'm essentially forced to attend a forced labour activity that may be dangerous, and I have no recourse whatsoever under the law. This is the system that's developing, and it's going to come in July, and we need to fight it every step of the way. We need to give unemployed workers the tools they need to fight back against such an unfair, punitive, dangerous system.
Yeah, and also, talking about bullying, the Centrelink robot debt scheme, which we thought would have been knocked on the head because it was so corrupt, so flawed it was set up to fail, has been extended for another 3 years, and automatic deductions of state government fines, say traffic or parking, from welfare payments without the recipient's consent. That can be, deductions will be 15% of income, that is $75 a fortnight for someone on Newstart. Now, that's got to be agreed to for the states, by the states, for it to go ahead. But that's on top of what you're talking about as well. Now, just moving on, I wanted to also talk about a new campaign. You've just also launched It's Time campaign to Labor to increase the Dole, and joint Newstart Action Group as well. So this Newstart Action Group, what's happening with that in terms of the councils?
Well, the Newstart Action Group is basically a national group that we've formed to try to put pressure on government and the Labor Party to increase Newstart and to essentially introduce policies where Newstart gets increased to the poverty line. That's our policy. Yep. So that's, we're calling for an increase of $175 per week, so the Newstart rate gets put to the poverty line. And how we're going to do that is in multiple ways. We're campaigning the government to try to get them to commit to it. I mean, you've got people like John Howard calling for an increase to the Dole. So I think this issue has become such a big issue at the moment that the government, firstly, are the ones that need to take responsibility for this, and we can't let them get off the hook just because they're Liberals, and we need to be pushing them hard, and we're actually currently developing a campaign around Julia Banks, who was the MP who just recently said that she could live on $40 a day. So we need to confront the Liberals on this issue, and we need to demand that they take responsibility. And then also the same thing with the ALP. We need to confront them on it and say, why haven't you committed to an increase in the Dole? You've got someone like John Howard who says the Liberal Party should commit to an increase, and yet the ALP haven't committed to that increase. All the ALP have said they will do is review it. Well, the payment is $175 per week below the poverty line. That's the end of the review. I mean, that's all you need to know. So increase the payment. It's a very, very... It's a shocking fact that this is the position we're in. It hasn't been increased in real terms for 25 years. And it's just a payment that is a one-way ticket to poverty for people.
That's right. Now, there's only one major business group that's opposed to it. That's the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And the Chief Executive, James Pearson, yesterday confirmed to the New Daily that he would not support an increase, saying increasing the Newstart allowance to the extent that it would make a material difference would be a significant cost to the budget. He said, our arguments that kind of expenditure would be more useful to spend on programs that are already proving to be successful in getting people who are long-term unemployed into jobs. Well, we know that. Green Senator Rachel Sewett proposed an increase to Newstart yesterday of $75 a week, but the Senate rejected that Greens push. That was voted down after Labor, One Nation, Darren Hinch, Corey Bernardi, David Lanhelm, they voted with the coalition to oppose the motion. At this stage, you know, they were accused of putting forward a stunt. But Greens leader Richard Di Natale hit back, saying it won't be long until the Labor Party do come on board the campaign to raise Newstart. So what do you think about that? Do you think they'll come on board?
Well, I think that there's such an entrenched culture in politics that punishing the unemployed is a vote winner.
Yeah.
So the Labor Party have been doing it. People might not be aware of this, but it was actually the Labor Party who first sort of spruiked the idea of Work for the Dole in the late 80s. That was under Hawke. That was something that he wanted to introduce, some kind of work program of that variety. And it was the Labor Party that also introduced the activation system that we currently have.
Yeah.
It's currently called mutual obligation, as people may know, but under the Labor Party, it was called reciprocal requirement. So you can see a running theme throughout Australian politics that the idea that unemployed people, there's something wrong with them and they should be punished. And
yes, if it's an individual
issue. Yes, that's right. And they're basically just trying to direct all responsibility for unemployment away from government and onto individuals themselves. And you can see why it's in the interest of ALP and the Liberals to do that, because they don't want to look at themselves in the mirror and say, actually, we have a role to play here in making sure there's more work for people and making sure that, you know, it's not just 17 people competing for every job vacancy, which is currently the position. So instead, they've created this boogeyman of the Dole bludger, and their policies reflect that.
Yeah.
But what's so interesting about what's happening now is that actually this culture, this punitive culture that's really entrenched government and the ALP is actually behind what the business groups want. The business groups are saying, we don't want this anymore. We want a Dole that's actually not a barrier to employment, that they recognise, like the Business Group of Australia recognise that a low dole means that the labour market isn't as work-ready. You've got 800,000 people on the dole, and if they're languishing deep below the poverty line, it's going to take quite a bit for them to actually be ready to work.
Exactly. So, and they haven't got enough money for transport, let alone anything else, even to get to the jobs.
Can I add a little bit to that?
Yeah, Duncan, sure.
Basically, if you lift the dole, all social security payments, that's an economic stimulus to what business people call the local shopping strip. The only people who shop at a local shopping strip are people who don't have cars. That's people who are on unemployment benefits. The local shopping strip, they're all saying they're going bankrupt. They're going bankrupt because we can't afford to eat. We can't afford to buy anything. Basically, we get our money spent on the our bills that come in the letterbox. That's it. There's nothing left. A lift to social security payments is one of the best things we can do to stimulate the Australian economy down the small business end, because we're the only people who take money from the government and put it straight back into the economy the day that we get it. We don't hide our money in overseas bank accounts.
Thank you, Duncan. Yeah, spot on. Well, look, Owen, thank you very much for talking to Unemployed Workers Fight Back. It's been a pleasure to talk to you on our program today.
Yeah, it's great. Great to have.
That was Owen Bennett.
Thanks for having me. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Owen, from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. And we'll go to an ad here.
Located in the heart of Thornbury, the Islamic Museum of Australia showcases the cultural and artistic heritage of Australian Muslims. Don't miss our latest youth-based exhibition, Ways to Be Muslim, and immerse yourself in a series of photographic portraits and unique personal narratives. This exhibition is hosted in partnership with Muslim Collective and the Victorian State Government and is showing until July 8th. Visit the museum website for more information. The Islamic Museum of Australia is a 3CR supporter.
I've got to strut my stuff. Yes, I'm gonna strut my stuff. I'm gonna strut my stuff everywhere I go. Oh, let's strut our stuff.
Hello, John?
Yes, Valerie.
Hi, I'm talking to John Falzon, Chief Executive of the St. Vincent de Paul Society National Council. And John, I've just been talking to AUWU President Owen Bennett and also got in the room Duncan Storer, who's a well-known activist from Geelong, especially in the poverty and homelessness area. So, John, I wanted to talk to you. I've had a look at a couple of the articles you've written recently about the budget, and also the other thing that you've been on about, which is very important, which is we need a social infrastructure budget. So first off, I just wanted to ask you what your opinions on the budget were for people that you represent, including disadvantaged people in Australia.
You know, if you're locked out of a job or if you're locked into an insecure job, this budget doesn't even bring home the two-minute noodles.
Yeah.
It does, however, bring home the caviar for the corporates.
Exactly.
This budget is an attempt at a massive redistribution of wealth and resources, not from the few to the many, but from the many to the few. This is going to result in a boost for inequality and a boost for the wealth of the already wealthy. And to do that, you're stealing from those who have little as it is. It's a disgrace.
It's been described by Per Capita as the most radical attack on Australia's progressive income tax scales in living memory, also because they're planning to completely abolish the 37% tax bracket, flatten it out to 32.5% for incomes between $41,000 and $200,000 per year, which is so unequal. How could anyone recommend a flat tax for such a discrepancy? Obviously, we're talking about people who earn nothing compared with those, but even so, it just actually exacerbates the inequalities, doesn't it?
Oh, completely. It's an extremist agenda. It does attempt to dismantle the progressive nature of our taxation system. Our tax system does need reform, but it needs to be reformed so that it can be more progressive and address those loopholes whereby people and corporations who should be paying their fair share are not paying their fair share. But what this budget proposal does is to give even more of the wealthy and the corporations a free ride. This effectively burns a hole through the structure of our revenue base, and it will result in an absolutely dystopian kind of future whereby it will be the survival of the fittest and the state will withdraw completely from its responsibility to ensure that nobody goes without the essentials of life.
You have said that modest cuts to income tax for low and middle income earners will not offset rising costs of living and underinvestment in social and affordable housing, increased out of cost expenses for medical services and aged care, and lack of adequate and fairly funded education at all levels. It makes it that much harder. And you've said that over the past four budgets, the government cut $15 billion from Social Security and community services, and billions more are in the pipeline. It seems to be bragging about this. The government's saying, well, you know, we've cut back on, it forgets the fact that there aren't enough jobs to go around. Of course, it doesn't even talk about that, does it? It says it's created jobs. But nothing is specific, and I don't think the media is keeping them up to it, do you?
No, I think there's been a real focus, unfortunately, on this distraction of the personal income tax cuts, which really don't amount to anything of any significance and don't address the cost of living issues. And in fact, you know, as we've said, will result in a greater cost shifting to low-income households. I think there needs to be a very, very forthright and rigorous analysis of what is being attempted in this budget, because it's not just an attempt to tinker at the edges. It's an attempt to completely upturn some of the social democratic foundations of our society. You know, we're nowhere near perfect. There's so much that needs to be done, but this will make things extremely worse in so many ways. But as you say, there's no jobs plan. There's continued putting the boot into the unemployed plan. There's a low wage growth and wage cutting, minimum wage minimisation, penalty rate cutting plan. There's an abandoning our young people plan. There's a making it harder for migrant workers plan. But there's no jobs plan, and there's no, absolutely no intention whatsoever. In fact, they're gloating over the fact that they are not going to lift the New Start rate, which forces people to wage a daily battle for survival beneath the poverty line. But as we know, I don't think this is accidental. I think it's quite intentional that it's of a piece with an aggressive industrial relations plan as well, which, you know, you attack people in the workplace and you attack them whilst they're out of paid work, so that, you make workers feel more vulnerable to the threat of unemployment and extreme poverty. And as we know, the line between paid work and being out of paid work is increasingly blurry with the rise in insecure and casualised and hyper-exploitative jobs.
Now, you talk about also, you say it's time for an alternative to the dying neoliberal framework. We cannot risk any further erosion of our social protection system. So is it dying, do you believe? And do you believe that the Australian public will buy this pathetic $10 cuts? Or do you think Labor's too close to the Liberals to produce an alternative?
Look, I can't comment on what people will buy and what they won't buy. I can say, though, I do believe neoliberalism is dying. I believe it's in its death throes and therefore it's thrashing about and trying to be even more extreme and violent in its attempts to hurt ordinary people. And that's why we're seeing a budget like this, and that's why we've seen attacks on people who are experiencing unemployment and underemployment and students and so forth. But I do believe neoliberalism is dying, and one of the reasons I believe that is it's unprecedented in recent history, the level to which inequality is being foregrounded and named for what it is in the mainstream political discourse. I see that as an enormous sign of hope. The fact that neoliberal capitalism is being named as the vehicle for this inequality, and that you've even got the institutions that wish to defend capitalism frightened by the excesses of inequality. You know, to have the OECD and the IMF and the World Bank all coming out being very cautious and worried about the growth of inequality says to me that there is a real fear that it has gone crazy.
I've got Duncan Storer here, and he's a well-known advocate against homelessness. I just thought I might bring him into the conversation, John.
Yes, please. Go Duncan.
Well, one of the things I noticed was the Victorian budget just before the federal budget, as far as Labor's going, and the Victorian budget, where housing is a state issue, doesn't mention housing whatsoever. There's no money in there for public housing so that we can have more public housing. We have 310,000 homeless people in Australia, and there's only one solution to that problem, and that's for the government to start building houses and for us to have a coordinated national approach with all states, all governments. For every child, every time I see a child sleeping in a park, in a car, I know that all of our parliaments failed. It doesn't matter what seat you hold while you're in parliament. Children are sleeping in cars in this country. That has to be fixed. I've been poor all my life since 1970. I've never seen poverty like this.
What's your comment on that, John?
Oh, I completely agree with you, Duncan, on the fact that we do need a national approach. The fact, you know, as you say, and I'm the same as you, every time I see anyone, but especially a child, out on the streets, it just breaks my heart. But I know that, having a broken heart doesn't solve the problem. We need to break the system and create a new one that doesn't tolerate that kind of rejection and exclusion of people. And we have the means to do it. The fact that the federal government wants to give away these massive tax cuts to the corporations, just doling it out as if there's no tomorrow, means very clearly we have it within our means to eliminate homelessness in Australia.
I like what Sandra Goldie says. Poverty is a choice of the Australian Parliament. Out of curiosity, what do you think about Labor saying they'll have an inquiry into social security? Do you think people on the social services side have a chance of getting Labor to turn that into a repeat of the Henderson poverty inquiry so that we may get a national plan on poverty?
Oh, look, I think we've really got to keep that momentum and the pressure up. The door has been opened, and we can't waste this opportunity. It's been a while since we've had such a strong consensus around the fact that New Start and other allowances are inadequate. I mean, for heaven's sake, when you've even got John Howard coming out and saying it should be lifted, you know something's wrong. The fact that you've got a very conservative economist like Chris Richardson coming out also saying that it's a national embarrassment. There's an incredible momentum. We've got to keep that pressure up, and we've got to turn it not into a review with a report, but we've got to turn it into very significant change, lasting change. We need an immediate increase, as we know, but we also need to change the way that the New Start allowance is indexed and how it's determined, so we take it out of the political arena.
Yeah, that's what I think. One of my basic things is welfare. Everybody has a right to social welfare should be livable, accessible, and social welfare in this country is neither of those two things. We're blocked out of, like, if you're trying to get onto social welfare, like, chances are you probably give up. And when you do finally get on it, you find out that you can't live at all whatsoever without delving into the black market.
That's right, and they're trying to eliminate the black market, so they say. Look, also, per capita, one of the things it would like to do is raise the rate of New Start by $50 a week and index it to wages effective July the 1st. And Deloitte has apparently costed this at only $3 billion. And it would have an immediate stimulatory effect on the economy, would actually help unemployed people find work. So it's such a limited, very dumb sort of view of the government when it's talking about jobs and growth. This could actually increase growth, couldn't it?
Oh, it would. It would. As a small business proprietor said to me, in response to seeing me bang on about this year after year about the need to lift New Start, and he says, I don't understand why why they just don't do it, you know, why are they so stingy? He said, you know, when people don't have any money and they suddenly get a little bit more money, they're not going to hide it under the mattress. They're going to be spending it. Yeah. And that's good for business, you know? And so you're right. It's a no-brainer. And yet they're giving money to people who don't need it and who won't be spending it. Because
not in Australia anyway.
Exactly. They've spent it on everything they possibly can, you know. You can only buy too many luxury, so many luxury cars and yachts, you know. You've got to stop somewhere.
Plus the money you spend on raising social welfare payments, you save in mental health, you save in prisons, you save in education. Like, if a child can eat, a child can learn. Everyone's going on about NAPLAN being the reason why children in our schools aren't learning, but nobody's taken notice of the fact that both single parents are $300 a fortnight below the poverty line, so of course their children can't learn.
Mm. No, you're spot on. Absolutely right. You know, it actually, you know, my question is, you know, how can we afford not to fix poverty and inequality and homelessness? Because we all lose as a society when, you know, when people are in this position. How can they, you know, contribute when they're barely able to survive? You know, and these are, you know, people with enormous talents, gifts, desire to, be part of society, be part of the economy. And as you say, you know, the worst thing of all is, you know, kids being pushed out because of the situation of poverty that they and their parents are placed in. And you know, you're absolutely spot on, Duncan.
Well,
you know,
they're trapped there for generations with the systems we have in place now. I don't see a place out of poverty for a child born into poverty today. Nobody's got a plan for that child.
No. And you know, you're right about education. You know, we can talk about NAPLAN until the cows come home, but if a child's not having breakfast, well, there's the first education resource they're missing out on.
Yes.
You know, it's very hard to focus at school if you haven't had breakfast, and if you don't have breakfast, and if you can't get a good night's sleep because you haven't got a safe and appropriate place to live.
Also wanted to mention to you, John, that there's no mention of anything for young people. I would have thought that if they were, the Liberals would be keen to get the young person's vote, but they're not going to get it. They must be assuming that they just won't get it. What do you think? Because there's nothing for them.
I can't comment on the political intentions, but I can totally agree with you that it was a glaring absence in the budget statements, that there was, you know, that it is an abandoning our young people plan. There is no vision, no hope, only despair. You know, the only young people who can sort of take some measure of confidence in the future of those that know that they'll be able to rely on their parents' wealth. But other than that, you know, whether it's housing, whether it's the education, further education, the education debt, a job, you know, all of these things have been completely left unspoken.
In fact, Brendan Churchill, a research fellow at Melbourne Uni, had written in The Guardian recently. He said, the young have become policy experiments under this government. The Prepare, Trial and Hire PATH program, announced in the 2015-16 budget by Scott Morrison, offered up young people as lowly paid interns, and PATH has been criticised for its lack of a pathway to secure work. So they've just been totally ignored, and I think the only way Labor could get in is if it actually makes young people a focus, but without causing division between generations, because that seems to be what the LNP is trying to do as well, cause division between the young and the baby boomers. That seems to be what they're doing.
It's a distraction. This intergenerational stuff is a distraction from the real business of class difference. That's the reality that people live with, and you know, included in that, of course, is gender-based inequality, and of course the ongoing toxic fruits of colonisation and racism towards people seeking refuge in our country. So if you put them all together, what you get is instead of a united society, you get a widening chasm between haves and have-nots.
Yeah.
And no one wins. No one wins.
No. Well, look, thank you very much for talking to Unemployed Workers Fight Back on 3CR. I've been talking with John Falzon, Chief Executive of the St Vincent de Paul Society National Council, and it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you both, Valerie and Duncan. It's a great privilege to have this discussion with both of you. Thank you.
Okay. Bye for now.
See ya.
Thank you.
I'm like sitting here because I want to be here. I hate being on the street. I can't stand it.
Believe me, people don't have much sympathy for sick people in this city.
I've been on the streets about 5 years.
Where is the support system? Is there people out there who you can turn to for help, for advice, for guidance?
I want to take my kids here. I want to go to the teacher. I want to do all these kinds of things, but I'm so limited to what I can do.
There are those that probably do need a lot of help, and there are probably not enough help out there for it.
There needs to be resources put into services. There needs to be specific services that are dealing with homelessness.
It's real rough. I'd hate to wish homelessness on anybody.
The truth is, it's very hard work to be a homeless person. You want to try it sometime.
They don't support us with nothing. Do you know what I mean? We just put it at the back of the bus and just going, oh yeah, do this, and you'll be right.
A lot of them have had really difficult, really difficult lives.
And then in the end, it's the people you don't know that are going to help you the most.
But maybe there needs to be a better support system, you know, to sort of get them back on their feet, get them back into employment.
Oh, I've been ready for change and ready for help for a long time.
Like, it's really difficult to go and get a job if you don't have a roof over your head.
Is that when people are engaged as human beings, then they get involved in finding their own right answers, and that's the important part of this mystery.
So, Duncan, it was terrific talking to John and Owen, wasn't it? I'd really like to hear what you've been up to in some of your organisational activities working with homeless people and some of the experiences you've had.
Okay, right. As far as working with homeless people in the last few months, I've basically had minor mental problems of my own to deal with, so I haven't been out there on the streets. But I've started up a charity called Victorian Kids in Care Advocacy, which also leads to poverty, but that's a different story. I shouldn't go into that. Basically, no middle-class kids end up in youth detention. So, yeah. It's another way. With those things you were talking about, fines are one of the worst ways they use to criminalise people who are on Newstart, and that thing you're talking about is going to put so many people in the area. I live in the area of 3219 in Geelong, which is a high housing commission area, as the area is Whittington's the name of the suburb. But yeah, that's completely gonna break the whole suburb. I don't know anyone who's been long-term unemployed who doesn't have fines. You get fines in so many different ways. With the tiny amount of money that we get per fortnight, there's absolutely no way we can pay off a fine, which means also, because of our poverty, there's no way that we can stop a $300 traffic fine from turning into a $2,000 you haven't paid your fine to turning into a 25 days in jail.
Yes.
That's how they criminalise us. Once you've gone through that system, you've just reduced your chance for getting a job for the rest of your life by 50%.
Yeah. Oh, that's a very important point. 25 days in jail.
It's $100 a day. That's what a jail. So. And most times when you go to court, if you've got a fine, you'll go to court and the magistrate will go, why can't you pay your fine? Yeah. You'll explain why you can't pay your fine. The first thing the magistrate will go is, here, have another $1,000 fine for not paying your fines. It all mounts up. But, yeah, on Monday I'm going to the press conference in Sydney, the ACOS post-budget press conference, hoping to meet up with my other half of Freedom from Poverty, Dave Burrows, meet up with Lance Presley, and hoping to work out getting a campaign about homelessness over the winter. If anyone's out there homeless tonight, find yourself a warm spot. It's going to be freezing tonight.
Oh, and wet.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, it's shocking to think of all those people. And you've been doing great stuff with the Australian Unemployed Workers Union as well, Duncan.
Yeah, speaking, I'm unemployed, so I'm a member. I'd advise everyone to join up with the Unemployed Workers Union. They're the only voice that we've got. They're the only people standing up for people who are unemployed. A lot of people talk about poverty, but not many people talk about the unemployed. If their only hope of getting a better social security welfare system is the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, and we should all join up and become members. It's free, and we should all get active. As we stand today, the figures of unemployed people today can decide who's going to be the next Prime Minister of this country. We all have to bandy together and start making policies for ourselves.
That's right, and it's on unemployedworkersunion.com, and you'll find that we have a rights booklet, because we all have rights. When you go along to the job agencies, we have a booklet to help you assert your rights. It's a bit like a consumer guide to dealing with job agencies and helping you deal with all the different breaches you might get, or the bullying, or fines. And we keep updating this information, and we're working on it. We have an advocacy line that operates from 10 till 2, Monday to Friday, and it's a national group. We're all volunteers. We have, I think, around 40 branches in Australia, and we're all volunteers. So we're all really, you know, you could lose your job tomorrow if you've got one at the moment. So just remember that. And for all those people that that aren't retired or in their 50s and 60s and can't get work, we know how difficult it is for you to try and survive on Newstart. And so we're right behind you. So please contact us on our website. And remember that this show, Unemployed Workers Fight Back, is on every second Friday of the month on 3CR under the Sewer Program. And it's time for us to go now. So from me, Valerie Farfalla, I want to say goodbye. I want to thank my guests, Owen Bennett, the president of the AUWU, John Fowlson, Chief Executive of the St. Vincent de Paul Society National Council, and Duncan Storer, who's involved in many homeless groups. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm going to